Welcome to the Sisters on the Front Lines podcast, where we unite with Christ to combat the shame surrounding young women struggling with pornography and share our stories and insights to gather more tools and weapons to fortify our stance on the front lines in the war against pornography. All right. Welcome to this next episode of the Sisters on the Front Lines podcast. Today, I am joined by Dr. Nathan Lenhart. And Nathan, first off, thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me.
Absolutely. Yeah, so I want to have you kind of give an introduction to yourself. Let's start with the professional background, and then let's hear about like your family and your hobbies and all that jazz.
Sure thing. I am an assistant professor in the School of Family Life at BYU. I got my undergraduate and master's degree at BYU in the same program. I got my PhD in social psychology at the University of Toronto. I've also been a visiting scholar at UC Berkeley, so I've had the chance to live in some pretty different places, which has been really great. Personally, I've oldest of six kids. So kind of was the third parent growing up in my family. I like to joke about that. One of my younger brothers, when he was 6 years old, he was asked how many parents he had. He said three, enlisted one of them. He's serious as well, wasn't trying to be funny. So,
oh my gosh.
I'm just talking to you about our family dynamics.
Oh my gosh. So you got some training. Do you have kids now?
I don't have kids.
You don't have kids now. Okay. Yeah. But you were prepped.
That's an unusual awesome. Amount of parenting experience for someone that's not a parent.
No kidding. That's so funny. Is there a big age gap between all the kids?
Yeah, there's a 16-year age gap between 16. Me and my youngest brother.
Okay. Dang. Yeah, that's quite a bit. That's awesome, though. It's a little bit different, but I'm sure it's had its ups and downs for you.
Awesome. Yeah, there's definitely pluses and minuses, I think, wherever your position in the family. But
totally.
I definitely see a lot of good things with being the oldest.
It's good. Good. That's awesome. How cool. Well, let's hear. Okay, before we get into kind of the meat and potatoes, let's hear, what do you like to do, like hobbies wise? I always like hearing that about people.
Sure. So I'm kind of all over the place. I'm someone that's enjoyed tackling people on the football field as much as I enjoy composing music or writing poetry.
Wow.
So, yeah, I love sports, love the arts, really passionate about great stories, whether it's in a film, TV show, book, or even a video game. Just give me something that's a great story that... changes the way I look at things, inspires me to be better in some way. Yeah. Passionate about great storytelling.
Wow. I love it. Yeah, that is quite the dynamic. The football fields and the poetry and film. I'm a sucker for a good story too. I can get with that. That's awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, sweet. Okay. So today I think our conversation will be focused on kind of couples, specifically married couples, and just talking about how pornography influences that. So just as some expectations for the listener. So I guess let's start, in all of your years, I guess, being in the academic world, what research is there on how pornography has affected married relationships?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think you've gotten a little bit of information from one of your previous guest, Brian Willoughby, who's actually a colleague of mine. We've done a lot of work together.
Sweet.
And I'd say that, probably echoing some of what he said, it seems most pronounced negatively when it comes to relationship stability. There is still some debate of kind of directionality of that, meaning what's the chicken and the egg here? But there's pretty clear, consistent negative connections between pornography use and relationship stability. Also tends to be fairly negative with relationship satisfaction, though perhaps not with the same consistency of relationship stability. Similar with sexual satisfaction, tends to be negative connections to that across studies, though there is some more variability there, where occasionally you'll find a study that, for example, showing that if couples are viewing it together, they might be reporting slightly higher sexual satisfaction. Though, yeah, it tends to be a little bit more mixed there. Also a little bit more mixed with men versus women using. Men using pornography tends to have a more consistent negative connection with relationship outcomes. Women using it, it's a little bit less consistent. But I would say looking at all of the literature together, while there's some exceptions with people reporting different ways it might benefit, the overwhelming consensus tends to be it being not so good for relationships.
Gotcha. And is there at all a difference in the dating relationship versus the married relationship?
You know, I actually haven't seen a lot of research specifically focusing on that distinction. That's kind of surprisingly in more current research. It tends to group basically long-term committed relationships. There's not a lot of research as specifically evaluating marital relationships when it comes to pornography use in comparison to other long-term relationships. So I guess I should clarify with the caveat of when I'm summarizing the research, much of it is generalized to long-term committed relationships. So couples that have been in a relationship for usually a couple years plus, not as much specifically focused on marital relationships in comparison to other long-term relationships, for example.
Gotcha. Okay. And you don't know, this might be out of like your realm of what you mainly focus on, but do you know if religion has any impact on that, or
Yes. So that's one thing that a lot of people are pretty consistently looking at. And I would say one of the quickest summaries is that the negative influence of pornography on relationships tends to be exacerbated for those that are more religious, though there is some debate as to why that is. In general, people that are more religious, religion tends to be a positive force in relationships on average. Again, talking averages, there's going to be some exceptions to that. But on average, religion tends to have a bunch of positive forces in a relationship. And it seems that pornography use has the potential to negate some of those positive influences that are coming from religion. So this is just throwing out very hypothetical numbers. This isn't exact here. But for example, let's say that the average highly religious couple reports a 9 out of 10 for relationship satisfaction. And then the average couple that isn't religious at all reports a 7 or 8 out of 10. If the religious couple is using pornography, maybe that drops them down from a 9 out of 10 to a 6 out of 10. If they're the non-religious couple whatsoever, maybe it drops them down from a 7 out of 10 to a 6 out of 10. So you can see it where it might be more pronounced amongst the religious couples, but it's not necessarily saying for sure that it's not like dropping from a 9 to a 1 or something. Gotcha. In most cases on average. Now, we can talk about in terms of what's possible, and that's certainly something that can happen, but that's probably a more accurate picture of what tends to happen on average.
Gotcha. Okay, that's super interesting. So it's just more of a kind of drop on average.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Okay. Okay, so based on like your research and your findings in these long-term and married relationships, how can married couples specifically approach this problem?
Mm-hmm. So one thing that I talk about in teaching one of my classes at BYU, it's on family adaptation and resiliency. We talk a lot about different stressors that come into relationships, how to navigate these kinds of things. And there are several different levels of stressors. So one is a stressor that comes into play and you have adequate resources in order to be able to handle it as a couple or as a family. You also have a next level of stress where maybe you need to appeal to outside sources to get extra help in order to resolve and fix whatever the problem is. And then you have a third level stressor, which is something that basically destroys the underlying foundation of the relationship and you need to rebuild almost from scratch and kind of just starting over. And the fascinating thing with pornography is it can be any one of those three, depending so much on the way that the couple addresses it and the way in which they experience it. So, for example, data on this, I haven't seen a lot, there was at least one study done several years ago that suggested about 20 to 30% of people consider a partner using pornography to be considered infidelity of some sort. Mm. So as an example, if you view pornography as being infidelity, that's more likely to be, say, that third level stressor. It's a complete betrayal of the relationship, completely undermines the foundation. And you have to ask all sorts of questions. For example, if you feel that sense of betrayal and that your partner's been lying to you and has been unfaithful to you, like, is this someone that I can trust? Do I have to reconceptualize all of our past history together? So in those cases, it becomes a very extreme stressor. There are all sorts of things that can be done to limit the possibility of that happening. And a big part of that is just having honest, open communication surrounding this in an earlier stage. So I'd say one of the biggest things that can help couples in navigating this issue in the long term is being on top of it in the earlier stages of the relationship. So they're better equipped to handle it as a long-term problem if this is something that enters a relationship. Gotcha. But certainly the level of awareness surrounding it, the way in which you see this pornography use, it's going to influence the level of stress or the type of stress that's felt, and you're going to respond differently accordingly. So maybe there's that middle ground where it's not considered you don't consider it to be infidelity in that way, or at least there's that open, honest conversation and understanding of what's happening. But maybe this person has been struggling for a long time and they don't feel equipped to be able to resolve this on their own. That absolutely is a case where some professional help can come into play on the marital level and also on that person's personal level in addressing pornography as well.
Totally. That's interesting. Is there, or do you have any maybe data that would show, like, is there a gap between those that are in maybe that level one stressor and just the level three? Like, do they kind of separate like that, or is it just pretty evenly spread, would you say?
Yeah, it's a great question. I would say that the closest thing that we have to that are kind of proxies of getting a feel of the way that people perceive their own use and their partner's use. Mm-hmm. And some of those factors are things like religion and moral disapproval of it. Mm-hmm. So kind of as we were talking about a little bit earlier, if you do believe it's something morally wrong that you're doing, it does tend to have a more pronounced influence, both psychologically and relationally, on how it affects things, right? Mm-hmm. So there's something to be careful of there where, I mean, we're talking here as Latter-day Saints, for example. I'm not saying that it's wrong to have moral disapproval of pornography. I have that. I believe that it's not healthy for relationships, right? But there is a healthy level of guilt that can come into play in recognizing that this is sending a message incongruent with what I want long-term in a relationship, as opposed to, say, an unhealthy level of shame that comes into play. Mm-hmm. So any time that there tends to be some of this moral disapproval surrounding it can be tricky in figuring out the exact effects of what's going on, but people do tend to experience more negative psychological outcomes. But on one hand, hopefully some good can come out of it and people leading some people to some more reparative actions and being motivated to change what it is that they're doing.
All right. Yeah, fair enough. That's a good answer. Yeah, because I think in my, like, experience, and maybe this is an extremely biased point of view, I don't know, it feels like it's kind of either you don't agree with it and you do feel super morally incongruent with it, or it's just like, you know, it's like, well, everybody watches it, right? Like, I just haven't seen a ton of, I guess, the in-between. But again, maybe that's just my own personal biases. But
No, that's fair. And I mean, it is kind of a fascinating thing to consider what the actual effects are as opposed to the way that you see the effects. There's some argument to be made that maybe there's almost a more accurate perception amongst those that morally disapprove of pornography in recognizing this is sending a message that's incongruent with what I eventually aspire to have in my own relationship, sexually and more broadly, as far as a marriage relationship goes. I think that there may be some cases in which people report it having no effect, that they're in a bit of denial, for example.
Right.
Everyone's doing this, it's totally fine. I would argue that that's not in fact the case, that while its influence may be very subtle, that it still is not a healthy thing, and you may not be aware of the ways in which it might be influencing you in unhealthy ways. So careful balance to be had there.
Yeah, totally.
It's doing to you.
Yeah, even without the beliefs of, oh, like, we have this, you know, eternal family that we're working towards, and the powers of creation are between, you know, a married couple, man and woman. Even regardless, if you don't have those personal beliefs, I agree with you. Like, it is a super normal stimulus, right? Regardless of how you, I guess, like, justify it or look at it, it is changing the way that your brain, you know, looks at things. So, yeah, that's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up. So, when the married couples approach it, I guess, I think a lot of times we're just not sure what each partner's role is, right? Especially as accountability partners. We did touch a little bit on this in Brian's episode, but I'd be curious to hear maybe if your answer differs. But what is each partner's role, maybe as the one struggling with the unwanted pornography use, or the one who is supporting your other partner?
So I did listen to the interview you had with Brian Welby, and I thought he brought up a lot of really great points with that. And I especially resonate with the point of making sure it's framed as this is us against pornography. It's not framing as this is just your problem. I mean, when you're in a long-term committed and especially marital relationship, like, there is a sense of healthy interdependence to be had, and taking your joys become my joys, my pains become your pains, right? And you work together in resolving different challenges. So I would say one common challenge that can arise that I don't think was quite mentioned, so maybe just an elaboration, is oftentimes what happens is when one person in the relationship has a challenge with pornography, the other can end up taking on some of the blame to an unhealthy extent, particularly with it being in like the sexual arena, and that typically being an agreement of exclusivity, particularly in church circles, and viewing it as a covenant relationship. Well, pornography is connected to sexuality, therefore I'm undesirable sexually. There's certain things that I'm doing there that just aren't sufficiently pleasing to my partner and things like that. And I definitely think that there's a potential risk, certainly in amongst therapist colleagues that I have, they talk about this coming up, where someone taking an unhealthy sense of an excessive sense of responsibility for what someone else is struggling with. So I guess that is kind of the caution. And yes, you confront the issue together as a couple, but also just making sure not to take responsibility for that other person's choices when they're struggling with that, right? And then as far as general principles, kind of alluding to what I was mentioning earlier, just how critical it is to be honest with each other about what you're experiencing. So the person that's struggling with pornography, if they do slip up, I would agree with what's been said earlier of it being important to honestly disclose what's happened. I don't think it needs to be something super in depth, for example, about specific descriptions of what content was viewed or anything like that. But making sure that there is that ongoing dialogue, that both are in the know of what's happening and how they can best be supportive of each other. And in all likelihood, in these cases where you have someone struggling with pornography and they're in a marital relationship trying to stop, when they slip up, they're going to feel really bad about it. But also having the sympathy of understanding how much that might hurt a partner. So just understanding on both sides of the person that's struggling to stop pornography, the non-pornography using partner, having the empathy to understand what that person's going through, but also the pornography using partner having the empathy to understand how that pornography use is hurting their partner, and being able to listen to those feelings as well, and frustrations and hurt. But yeah, continually keeping in mind that you're working on this together. And yeah, it's not out of the question of getting some additional help when you find that you as a couple aren't able to address this on your own, whether it's ecclesiastical help, professional help. Certainly appealing to additional resources is a healthy route as well.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And that is hard work, like being open and being honest. Like, yeah, it is so much easier in the moment to just hide it away. But looking at the long-term consequences, it is so much better and so much more worthwhile to be open and to be honest and to muster up that strength and that courage to be more empathetic on both sides. And yeah, that's hard work, and nobody's going to be perfect at it right away. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and like I've mentioned, I think the evidence is coming in consistent enough to say that pornography in and of itself sends negative messages about sexuality, has a subtle influence on the way that we see relationships, and it's problematic. But that typically pales in comparison to the potential impact of you're unfaithful to me as a partner, right? So often the way in which we respond to pornography ends up exacerbating the negative consequences far beyond what pornography in and of itself is doing in the way we see relationships.
Totally. Yeah, I totally agree with that. And especially like, as I kind of talk from like the kids' perspective, right? Like if your parents are talking about, oh, like, did you hear so-and-so was like struggling with pornography and it just kind of like tore their family apart. Well, if that kid is hearing it, there's no possible way they're going to come and talk to you about that, because that's just, you know, that's like the narrative that's written. And for so long, like, I mean, I've heard so many things like that, but you're right. It is just kind of the view and the approach that you have with it. And when you see it as, when both partners see it as something that is able to be solved and taken care of, then it's going to be solved and it's going to be taken care of.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. As long as there is for sure the sincere desire of both partners and the effort put forward in addressing it.
Totally.
Yeah. These 100%. Absolutely are solvable problems.
Yeah. 100%. You mentioned a little bit how it kind of changes, I guess, each partner's perception, right? Do you have any research or data, or I guess just knowledge about how does like a sex life change when pornography use is involved?
Yeah, this actually is one of the areas I've dived in probably most deeply in some of my work. I wrote a pretty lengthy review of the research on this. And so admittedly, I'm not appealing to say one specific study where we found these specific findings in this one data set. So this is basically a synthesis across tons of different studies, as well as some logical arguments and theories out there. But I'll make my case for why I find this to be the case.
Sweet.
And this is published in the academic literature. So there are enough people that have found some merit to these arguments to think they're considering, I'd say.
Perfect.
So the basic gist that I had in this argument in reviewing the literature, and is a big reason why a lot of people are talking over each other in how pornography influences people's sex lives, is the messages that you see within pornography seem pretty congruent with what I would describe as more short-term sexual quality, but incongruent with what I would describe as more long-term sexual quality. What does that look like? Well, it's a fascinating thing what we do in research with even a measure like sexual satisfaction. You ask people all these questions, like, on a scale of 1 to 7, how satisfied are you with your sexual relationship? And, well, you think about it. If someone has been in a relationship for 2 weeks, as opposed to married for 20 years, they would both report a 7 out of 7 on that scale of sexual satisfaction. You think that 7 out of 7 looks the same? I would argue that it doesn't, not necessarily. So there's some great work by Helen Fisher, who kind of breaks up different sexual motivations that we have. And some of these tend to be more congruent with short-term versus long-term sexual quality. We have what's more of a sexual drive. And this is say, just, you might think of it as the early raw sense of a physical attraction that you feel towards someone. And this is someone you can feel towards a wide variety of people at any given time. You also have romantic love. And this is the feeling that comes when there becomes a certain specialness of someone, right? Their little quirks start to become endearing to you. And you start to focus in and develop more of an exclusive interest romantically in a particular person. And then finally, the longest term of these is attachment, which is the motivation to stay together, if you will. So sexual drive tends to motivate you to seek out a wide variety of potential partners. Romantic attraction tends to help you focus on narrowing that interest to be more exclusive. And then finally, attachment is the motivation for staying together. And that's something that tends to be developed from being reliably responsive to each other over an extended period of time. And it's especially attuned to the specific characteristics of that person, right? So you think about what pornography is, its content, it's very much congruent with satisfying that sexual drive and bringing a sense of sexual gratification or fulfillment in that short term in addressing that particular desire. But you start getting into the importance of someone's identity, the specific things that make them them in a relationship. Pornography doesn't line up well with this idea of romantic love, and especially not with attachment. One of the biggest reasons is that one of the most consistent scripts or messages within the content of pornography is a message of objectification, which is basically a separation of someone's physical attributes from their identity, their relationships, just who they are as a whole person, right? And the crux of my argument is you can't come to love someone completely for who they are if you accept a message of sexuality without identity. So that's so at the core of, I think, what makes long-term marital sexuality such a beautiful thing is the wholeness of the person, loving someone completely for who they are and who they have the potential to become, this integration of not just physical fulfillment, but also a deeper emotional connection, relational connection, and for many, a spiritual connection, right? So pornography tends to fragment that and focus solely on this sexual drive, physical fulfillment, to the neglect of all these other beautiful things that make a sexual relationship particularly meaningful in the long term.
Yeah. Yeah. That was so interesting with the, there's the sexual drive, the romantic attraction, and then the attachment. And yeah, I think you just framed that so beautifully. Pornography only focuses on the very first. And you make a really good point. Like, how do you, like, I am a firm believer that, like, God has given the gift of, you know, sexuality between a married couple as such a beautiful gift and a beautiful thing and power of creation. And yeah, how are you supposed to ever portray that in, like, some video or some writing? Like, there's just no way that you can accurately portray what a wonderful gift it is. So it's totally distorted. Yeah. I fully agree with you. I think that was so beautifully said. So,
thanks.
Yeah, seeing that pornography does only kind of show that sexual drive part of a relationship, and a lot of times people who have been struggling with pornography for a while don't have a good grasp of what maybe the romantic attraction or the attachment part looks like, mm-hmm. how do we, like, rewrite those scripts, and how can each mm-hmm. partner just kind of help and resolve that?
Yeah, it's a great question. And yeah, it is an interesting point where I think a lot of people don't have that awareness because they are getting something that they deem being of value from their mm-hmm. experiences with pornography, right? This isn't to say that sexual drive is a bad thing. Like, hopefully you maintain a strong sense of passion totally. And sexual interest towards your partner over time, right?
Yeah.
And people do, to some extent, get that sense of sexual fulfillment and release from viewing pornography, at least in the short term, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it definitely helps to understand a little bit more so what people are experiencing that draws them to it and why they might continue to go back, right? I think that's really critical in not dismissing the value they perceive they're getting from it, because that's going to limit our ability to talk about this and actually help people in recognizing that there's more to this than just that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, as far as rewriting the scripts, scripts are a complicated thing. So obviously, pornography has the potential to be a very strong informer of our sexual scripts, but there's so many other pieces of information that we're pulling in. You just mentioned a little bit earlier, just little things that parents might be saying mm-hmm. about sexuality or about pornography that mm-hmm. even with the best of intention might make children afraid to talk about these subjects in the future from kind of a focus on the fear surrounding these things, right? Mm-hmm. So there's all sorts of things that influence the degree to which sexual scripts influence us. This is also something I talked about in my review of the literature. One is exclusivity. So the extent to which pornography is an exclusive source of information about sexuality, as opposed to, say, how much information we're getting from parents, peers, sexual education programs, church, any of these types of things they come in and they interact with each other in the way that they shape our understanding of sexuality, right? Another big part is the formativeness. So the age at which we're exposed to these scripts, you start viewing pornography at an earlier age, for example, it's more likely to have a formative influence on the way you see sexuality. Hmm. Resonance, which is basically the extent to which you believe that this is something that is real versus not. So if you see the messages you're seeing in pornography as these are accurate depictions of what a sexual relationship might look like I'm using this as a sexual education tool, it's more mm-hmm. likely to influence your scripts, as opposed to, say, that attempt to separate yourself from what you're seeing and recognizing it as a quote-unquote fantasy, similarly to what we do with watching films, right? It's not to say that there's no influence, but it's less so than if you're specifically using it as this is a good source of information on what sexual relationships actually look like. Mm-hmm. And then finally, reinforcement. So this often comes into play with some of the conversation on masturbation, for example, where if you're experiencing, say, some of the chemical rewards that come from masturbation in response to pornography, this can have kind of an affirming influence on this is a good script, this is something that I like when you're experiencing some of those things, right? The nice thing in identifying each of these specific things and understanding how strongly pornography is potentially influencing you as a script is all of these are additionally intervention points, right? Hmm. So we talk about exclusivity. Well, it turns out that we view these scripts from pornography as being unhealthy. Let's get other sources in there. Mm-hmm. Let's go to more accurate information as far as how beautiful and holistic sexuality can be in relationships, right? Yeah, that's probably one of the clearest points as far as intervention, but just an example with that resonance point, some clear education surrounding the fact that, you know, like the things that you're seeing in pornography, this really isn't how sexuality typically works. Like,
yeah,
this is not a realistic depiction as far as how long it takes for someone to become aroused and eventually to experience a climax, right? Most people aren't as flexible as the people you see in pornography. Most people bodies aren't shaped in the same way as you see in pornography. Mm-hmm. Just so many things you can point out in helping people recognize the disconnect between this very fantasy-centered sexuality as opposed to what actually takes place in a healthy long-term relationship.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And it's hard because, especially in our church culture, like, it's such a sacred topic, and so we don't want to, you know, like, talk about it in something that's, I guess, like, disrespectful to it. I don't know if that's the word I'm looking for. But sure. Then, with pornography being so easily accessible, it's like, mm-hmm. okay, well then, that's my resource, right, to learn about it. Yeah. So I think you're so right. I think just all of the time when I'm talking to, like, researchers or therapists, like the general consensus is we just need more quality sex education, right? Mm-hmm. And like education about what real healthy sex is, because kids are curious about it, and that's just fine. And they're going to be educated one way or another. And we need to have outlets and accessible outlets to them that provide them with that healthy education rather than education through pornography.
Yeah, absolutely. One of my other colleagues, Jason Carroll, has said something I quite like, where if it's not you as a parent that's talking about pornography and sexuality with your kids, it's Wikipedia or worse. Like it's a natural interest that tends to arise in the vast majority of people, right?
Totally.
And if they're not going to feel comfortable going to their parents for answers, well, it's likely going to be peer groups, likely going to be the internet. And obviously when you turn to the internet, there's a decent likelihood that eventually can lead to some pornographic sites, as an example. So right. Important to have these ongoing conversations earlier on, and certainly contextualize the conversation of pornography within wider conversations about healthy sexuality in general.
Yeah.
Otherwise you risk having too much of a fear-based approach, which doesn't end up being particularly healthy.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I actually remember when I was struggling with it, I remember Googling, like, is it okay for women to view pornography or something like that? And of course the internet told me it was okay. But there was no way, because of how much shame I was feeling, there was no way I was gonna go like ask my parents, hey, is it okay if I view this? I knew that it was, you know, it was, like you said, incongruent with like my moral views, but there's no source on the internet that's gonna tell me, hey, this is actually what it's doing to harm you, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think you're right. Having those continual conversations is really important.
Yeah, it's a great point. I appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yes, thank you so much, Nathan, for coming on. We'll jump into the last two questions now. First off, what keeps you on the front lines in the war against pornography?
Yeah, for me, it's, I think it really started for me from my mission experience, actually, being in Bulgaria for a couple of years, where it seemed that I was seeing a lot of family and relationship problems, and then pornography was pretty rampant in the area. And I don't know, it just seemed to draw a connection in the way in which it was informing people's views of relationships wasn't the healthiest of things. Mm-hmm. And it motivated me to do something about it, to be able to have a say. And I guess by extension of that, deeply, I think that sexuality has the potential to be one of the most beautiful pieces of life. I think that there's a reason why, specifically in our faith, we have a heavy focus around the exclusivity of sexuality in marriage. It really is such a defining force in what makes a marital relationship marital and is foundational to the creation and maintenance of a family, right? So it seems that that particular area of life, there's so many conflicting messages surrounding that area. Mm-hmm. It seems that there's a lot of poor education on the subject, specifically how it fits in with wider relational and marital ideas, that it seemed like an area that a lot of good could be accomplished, an area in desperate need of people to come in and be a voice of, here's this more holistic, beautiful vision of what sexuality can be. And then once we're able to identify how beautiful that vision is, it's only then that we're able to identify the ways in which pornography use is incongruent with that vision that we're striving for, right?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Wonderful. Well, next question. What would you say to a young girl who is struggling with pornography right now?
You know, what's interesting specifically with young women, I think there is, and I've heard you talk about this, I do think that there is still an extra layer of shame and concern that comes with it. Just because we have this dialogue surrounding the fact that this is a problem that men have, right? So a lot of women feel the sense of, I'm not supposed to be having this. There must be something really wrong with me in order to be having an interest in this type of material, right? Mm-hmm. And I guess one of the first things that I'd say is, there's nothing wrong with you for being interested in sexuality. There's nothing wrong with you for finding some aspects of pornography appealing and trying to better understand how sexuality works and to have some of those feelings arise and why this might be something that's appealing. I think another thing that I would say with that is that regardless of how you're feeling right now, how dejected, how shameful you feel, that this is something that you're never going to be fully loved. This is something that's going to ruin your relationship, that there always is hope. There are things to be worked on. We all have our problems that we bring into relationships, right? Some of us are a little less honest than we'd like to be. Some of us have a little worse eating habits than we'd like to have. These are things that aren't good in relationships. Some of us lose our tempers. Some of us maybe get a little too prideful and arrogant from time to time. We all have things we're working on. We all have things that we need to improve on. And while this certainly is something to overcome and work through, it's like any of these other things. And there are resources that are available. There's people that you can turn to that are going to give you some support. There's a scripture in the Doctrine and Covenants. It's a very simple one, but I really love it when it comes to this subject. If you are prepared, you shall not fear. There are so many places in order to receive accurate, helpful information that can help us to be prepared in addressing some of these different problems. I've seen that in plenty of people's lives. The better informed we can be in getting an accurate sense of who we are, who we have the potential to be, and contextualizing where pornography fits in a much wider picture more accurately can give us the adequate tools and preparation to no longer fear it and gradually overcome any struggles that we have with that.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I'm so glad that you shared that scripture. And yeah, this doesn't have to be something that we approach with fear. Like, there are so many, and there's a growing number of resources that are available to help with this. And there's more help out there than you think that there is, I promise. And it's overcomable. It's going to take work for sure. But it's like one of the most beautiful processes that you can go through, and it's going to provide you with opportunities to learn more about what a wonderful God-given gift our sexuality is. And so take those opportunities and turn it, you have the agency and the opportunity to turn it into something that is a good thing for you and an educational thing, and flip it on its side, and you're going to overcome it. Like, I promise for anyone listening, it's so achievable to not have pornography as part of your life anymore. And like Nathan said, to take that holistic view and learn more about just what a wonderful, wonderful being and wonderful person that you are. So thank you so much, Nathan, for coming on. I really do appreciate your time. And listeners, thank you so much for listening. If you have a story to share, please reach out to me on Instagram at sistersonthefrontlines or via email at sistersonthefrontlines@gmail.com. If there's anything that Nathan mentioned that you are curious about hearing more about, I'll link it in the show notes. I'll include the scripture that he mentioned as well. And please remember that you are not alone, and you are not alone, and you are loved, and this is overcomable. And you're doing great things, and you're going to keep doing great things. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it and give the podcast a rating on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify so that we can reach more young women, parents, and leaders. And until next episode, keep up the good fight on the front lines.